Roundtable on Crick Info Talk.
Hello and welcome to Crick Info Roundtable. This is Ian Chappell speaking. Cricket has changed dramatically in the last 40 years. The amount of cricket played has increased enormously, and from purely test matches at international level, players now also compete in 50 overs a side, limited overs games, and 2020 games. The emphasis on fitness and skill has changed. So has the number of injuries. Players earn their living from being on the field, not being laid up on the physio's couch. So to discuss the importance of fitness in the success of modern-day teams and many other issues concerning fitness in cricket, I have with me Kumar Sangakkara, Sri Lanka's top batsman and former wicketkeeper, and Andrew Leepers, former physio of the Indian cricket team. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Ian.
Yeah, hi, Ian. How you doing?
Andrew, perhaps if I start with you, is it just a coincidence that the strongest cricket team in the world, Australia, is also the one that's most fitness conscious?
It's a question that I get asked a lot, Ian, throughout the years, and I think we really have to look at what the old term fitness actually comprises. It's a term which is used in the media quite frequently to cover a broad range of parameters. You know, you can look at the endurance of a player, the strength, the speed, the agility, flexibility, and, you know, which one are we sort of basing that sort of observation on? Is it a coincidence? I think that if you speak generally, there is certainly precedence for saying that, you know, the fitter the team, the better the skills are going to be. And we go back from there. If we compare other teams which aren't as physically fit, then their performance is going to be a bit lower. You know, something which we obviously work on. We obviously have to look at the strengths and weaknesses of each of the players on an individual basis, and go from there. It's also a vague term in terms of what we define fitness by. You know, if we look at a fast bowler, how do we compare their fitness to, say, a wicketkeeper or a spin bowler, for example? So it's a bit vague sort of to say it's a coincidence.
Kumar, you've been in the game for a while now. How much has the role of fitness changed while you've been there?
Well, I think quite a lot. There's a huge amount of emphasis on fitness. I mean, we practice our skills often, but I think we do a lot more weight training, a lot more agility work and endurance work than skill now, because especially off season we try to get as strong as possible so we last, because during tours it's a bit difficult to get your fitness work done as regularly. But I think the biggest change in Sri Lankan cricket has been that guys have paid a lot more attention to getting stronger and fitter. And also we've had physios who have tailor-made individual fitness workouts for players, so that, you know, like Andrew was saying, wicketkeepers do a different workout, fast bowlers do a different workout. But I think that the key is for individuals to get as fit as they can be and as strong as they can be. And if you are, your skill levels will improve, or you can do much more with your skill than you already can. And we've had Alex Contouri since 1995 who set up our infrastructure for fitness development, and that, you know, kicked on. I think even though we didn't have the fittest looking 1996 World Cup team, from then on to now, it's been phenomenal for guys coming in who have come in and just got stronger and fitter, and they seem to do a lot more with their skill because they are stronger and able to withstand playing cricket at this tempo.
Andrew, cricket's a pretty unique game. We've heard about how you've got to tailor it for the different facets of the game, but does it also need to be tailored for the game of cricket?
Yeah, I think what we're finding lately is a lot of research is coming out of Australia now. That's the predominant country that it's coming out of. England's doing some as well. And it's only once we get the outcomes of the research can we actually understand the physical demands of the sport itself. The use of heart rate monitors, the use of GPS tracking devices, so we know how far players are travelling during a match, we know how fast they're travelling during a match, we know what sort of heart rates they reach during while they're batting or bowling, how quickly their recovery needs to be between balls, between deliveries. So it's only once we've got this information can we then tailor the fitness specifically. And that's where, up until just recently, we've really gone by, you know, what the trainers sort of feel, speaking to the players and observing the game, what we think the demands of cricket might be. And as such, then we tailor the fitness training according to that. So the research which is coming out now, I think a lot of it's still top secret. I think Cricket Australia is sort of filtering it through. But it's coming down into the rest of the world. And so hopefully we should see, with this new information, more specifically tailored programs, not just from an individual basis, but also from a specialisation process, you know, a basis where you're either a keeper or just a batsman or a fast bowler. So it's exciting times over the next few years, basically.
Kumar, I remember talking to former Pakistan coach and England Test cricketer Bob Woolmer a couple of years ago, and he told me then that he felt the players had reached the point where they couldn't go flat out every day because of the demanding schedule. Do you feel that is the situation?
That we play too much cricket, Ian?
Yeah, and because of that, you sort of had to, you know, you had to sort of pace yourself a little bit.
Well, I think, yes, in the case of fast bowlers, but I think batsmen especially would probably like to play quite often, especially when they're in form. I think that's the best way, even if you're out of form, to get back into form is to play a lot of cricket. So I think, again, it's individual need and team requirements, of course. Our fast bowlers usually will have to pace themselves for a year or 2 years, but I think the batters have to keep playing as much as possible, and that's how you build up a core of batters, I believe. But you know, cricket is you know what we love playing, but you know we've got to balance it out between having the best team on display as often as possible, without having to pace or rest them. But I think, you know, when your body goes through that much of stress day in, day out for consistently long periods of time, you do get breakdowns here and there. This is the eternal question. How do we balance it? So I think we've got to find a way of doing it, because even though players have got fitter, you know, we've had a lot more injuries, and I would love to know why that is, especially since Andrew's joining the discussion. But if we can find a way to make sure that the guys are stronger for longer and can play extended periods of time, that will be the way to go, because I don't see, cricket slowing down in the near future.
You talked about the number of injuries. What are the most common injuries, Kumar?
We've had a lot of ankle injuries for fast bowlers, especially Dilara Fernando is now in Australia undergoing an operation on his ankle. We've had a lot of side injuries for our bowlers, and a few stress fractures at the back. I mean, those are the things that have come about. Batsmen, of course, just the usual sore muscles, or if they do get hit, they might have a broken bone here or there. But other than that, nothing major with the batters, but quite a lot with our bowlers. Except, of course, for Chaminder Vaz. He's been quite resilient over the years, and that's strange how it differs from player to player. Vaz is, of course, a very strong player, but Dilhara is, of course, probably, you know, in the essence of fitness, he's probably a fitter, stronger bloke than Vaz. Mm. But Vaz has played consistently over the years without major injuries that Dilhara has gone through.
I think a lot of that depends also on their action as well, doesn't it, mate? A good example of that is Ashish Nehra, who has performed extremely well for India over the years, but has also had long periods out of the game because of the stress that his action placed on his body.
Andrew, there's a lot of evidence coming out of the United States that baseball players, for quite some time now, have been using drugs, obviously for a number of reasons, but one of them being to recover quickly from injuries. At what stage do you reckon cricket is in this regard? I mean, I can't believe that, you know, we're probably talking 10, 15 years in the United States. I can't believe that cricket would be that far behind.
Well, I hope we are that far behind, mate, because any steroid use is banned by the World Anti-Doping Agency. And, look, you've hit on a very important note there. They use it for recovery, and it's recovery or sort of efficient recovery which enables the players to constantly back up one performance with the next performance. There are a lot of other more legal methods of improving a player's recovery, ranging from physical methods to nutrition to active recoveries as well. And I hope we don't see the use of these things coming into the game. The ICC with testing at the main tournaments is obviously one deterrent, but there may be cause for, you know, bringing these drug tests into sort of first class levels around the world. I know Australia has it, but certainly India, Pakistan, subcontinent countries don't do it at this stage. They don't have proper testing facilities. In my time, 5.5 years with India, I never saw any sort of evidence of that happening either at any level, whether it's steroid, whether it's artificial stimulants, or any of those other sort of different types of doping that occurs. I'm quite happy to say that our guys are pretty clean in that respect.
What's your experience, Kumar?
Well, the same. You know, we are given a list of banned substances so that we are aware of the things that go into our body. We are asked to check with our physio before we take any medication from any doctor. If there is any change from WADA on that list of banned substances, our physio and our trainer, they do a presentation for the team saying what the changes are and then how we should prepare for those changes. And I think if there's anything beyond that list that is required, I think we have the TUE to fill out and send to the ICC. So I haven't ever seen any evidence of anyone taking something that they should not take. But I think, you know, information is power. So I think as long as the players are aware of what their responsibilities are and are aware of what they should avoid, I think cricket in that sense is probably the cleanest sport.
A lot of the training for cricketers is particularly pre-game or pre-play, is playing other sports. Andrew, what sort of percentage of injuries occur while they're playing games other than cricket?
We've had a few over the years, from broken fingers to sprained ankles to sprained backs. Now, we have to try and find a nice balance between keeping the players fresh and optimally aroused, so to speak. So, you know, day four of a test match, the guys are pretty tired. You need to sort of perk them up a little bit. So we have to try and get in something competitive to just sort of kick-start them, so to speak. I know in India we tried to find that balance by using volleyball. The guys responded really well to volleyball. It's generally low impact, non-contact. The guys can throw themselves around, but certainly we saw those types of injuries drop off quite considerably when we stopped playing games like soccer or football before the match started. I know that when I worked in South Africa in first class cricket, the head coach actually sprained his ankle in a warm up, and so after that that day we stopped playing it there. Look, we have to, you know, in a test match you can't be losing players, you know, through injury in warm up. It's just it's not a good start to the day, and it's just not professional. So I think they find a nice balance between getting the guys fired up and keeping them safe.
I'll ask both of you. Let's start with Kumar as a senior player and a member of selection from time to time. Where do you draw the line on whether a player is fit to play or not?
That comes, in our case, it comes straight from the physio and the player. Sometimes you get aches and pains that you can play through, and you know, you've got a, you know, something sore somewhere. That doesn't mean that you can't play. So the physio, we get the physio and the player talking as much as possible to each other and to the captain and the coach. And we make sure that, you know, everything is open and that players realize that that if they are in difficulty, and that they should say that out openly and not be afraid, thinking, well, I might lose my place in the side or I might not have a chance of coming back. We try and clear, you know, those channels of communication so that players are very open and honest in saying what they're feeling, what their bodies are going through, and talking at the right time with the physio. So we get a lot of input from the player and the physio, but the final decision is made on the physio's assessment and what he tells the captain, the coach, and the selectors. And we try and make sure that's the consistent policy we follow with everyone, and not giving preference to one player over the other, even though they're our best players. But if they can play through it, the physio confirms it, and we go on that decision.
Andrew, I guess you've got some senior players there who have been through a bit more than younger players. Do you treat them differently when you're considering this point?
Look, it's it's one thing to pass somebody, so to speak, or declare them fit from a physical perspective, but you also have to pay considerable attention to their psychological recovery as well. It's the player's confidence in their injury, in their ability to perform what they have to do, and also the fear they have to come of re-injury and poor performance. So it's actually quite a complicated area. Obviously, the senior players have a much greater knowledge of their bodies, of previous injury, of what's expected of them. Junior players, on the other hand, tend to just be like a bull at a gate and don't stop to think about the consequences of coming back too soon. They just go into the team. There's pressure on them to maintain their spot in the team. So when it comes down to, you know, declaring somebody fit to return to the game, it's not black and white in that respect. The senior players, we tend to allow them to tell us if they're fit or not, obviously if they've passed all the physical tests, functional tests. Younger players, I think the physios take a bit more of a deciding role in that respect, because you're obviously dealing with inexperienced players and whose motivation level is very, very high. It's a very complicated area. It's not black and white, and you really have to take it on a case-by-case basis.
Andrew, how much of fitness is genetically determined? Are some players more naturally athletic and fitter than others?
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly the case. I think that in some sports, genetics plays a huge part. In cricket, I'm not so sure. It's very much a skill-based game primarily. A player doesn't get to the top level being the fittest guy on the team. He gets there because he's highly skilled and he gets the outcomes that he wants. It's once you get to that level, though, that you can actually then tap into that genetic window of potential that each and every one of us has. And that's where the individual assessments and screenings come into play, so that the trainers and physios can tailor a program to try and tap into whatever extra potential that player has. So, you know, the old argument, Indians might be not as genetically gifted in terms of athleticism than compared to, say, the Aussies or the South Africans. I think that every player themselves has a genetic potential which they can improve on. And I think it's an old excuse. I think it's a lame excuse. And, India sends athletes to the Olympic Games. They might not win gold medals, but certainly they're working at 98% of their genetic potential. So a cricketer is nowhere near they're working at the top of their genetic potential.
Kumar, we hear about one of the big problems for a player going from domestic cricket to international cricket and the big jump. But we rarely discuss the physical leap, because it is a lot more demanding, having to back up more often. How difficult is that to make that change as a player from domestic first-class cricket to international level?
Well, it certainly depends on certain aspects, I think, of your fitness, in the sense, you know, we've had guys coming in straight from club cricket and running unbelievably high on the bleep test. But that doesn't mean that these guys go and will adapt to the different movements that they have to make on the field. It's not running in a straight line all the time. There's coordination, agility, everything that comes into. And, of course, I think the biggest part of that is reading the game. And I think that is the shift that a lot of people make from club cricket to test cricket, where they're always, you know, reading the run of play, you know, being quickly aware of what they have to do on the field, not just catching the ball, but also things like backing up, things like, relay throws, getting your body into the right position, things like that. So I think that when they do make that jump, especially in Sri Lanka, we have a problem with having proper fitness trainers and fitness awareness, especially at club level. And it's a whole new world when they do come into international cricket. So to get these guys understanding that there are certain things they have to do, like strength training, agility, special recovery sessions after games, things like that, that will help them, you know, having better and longer careers. To get their head around that, it takes a bit of time, but we try and build that into our team culture. So when a guy comes into the dressing room, he's carried along by the other guys who keep, you know, doing the right things at the right time. But I think in Sri Lanka especially, there is a problem coming from club cricket where the players are quite a ways behind in strength and other fitness levels, but also in game awareness, where how they can apply what they have to bettering their skills is also, I think, lacking. But that's something we're trying to work on.
Andrew, there was a time when they had best days in test matches. And I guess a fast bowler in particular who had a little niggling injury, it gave him a little bit of time to recover. There's no rest days now, and there's a hell of a lot of back-to-back test matches. So is that a problem with those little niggling injuries that suddenly, you know, become bigger?
Obviously, it's a problem. We'd like to have players out there without any niggles. I think in this day and age, it's going to be rare to find a player who doesn't have an ache or a pain somewhere. Ideally, the programming of fixtures needs to be addressed from the administration perspective, trying to get the spacing right, the travel arrangements right, and those sort of zigzagging across countries and on airplanes, which cuts out on injury recovery time, treatment time, just basic rest time. We tend to, sports medicine itself in this day and age is designed to try and maintain an injury throughout the length of a match. If an injury occurs during a match, we're there to try and make sure that it doesn't get worse and it doesn't stop the player from losing some element of performance. Obviously, the body will heal by itself naturally if given enough rest. Now, because we don't have enough rest, that becomes an ongoing issue. So over the length of a tour, the physio works harder and harder trying to keep these players back on the field. And it's only once we have the breaks or the long breaks between tours that those injuries can really be addressed.
And finally, I guess with the fully professional era, you get, certainly in the test match arena, you get players probably staying on a bit longer. What's the correlation between age and fitness?
I think that there's no excuse for not being fit as you get older. I think there is argument to suggest you take longer to recover, though. So what we find is that, physiologically, we can actually say that, yes, our tissues do become stiffer. We lose elastin, we replace it with collagen in terms of the protein in the connective tissue. So from a medical perspective, we can argue, yes, a player becomes stiffer, they take longer to get back onto the park. Fitness-wise, I think that there's no real excuse. I think that a player might have to work a little bit harder as they get older, and I think there's some good examples of that. I think Shane Warne was a good example of someone who worked harder towards the end of his career to keep out there in the park. I know Sachin works very, very hard to maintain his fitness and his form. Rahul Dravid, Anil Kumble, they work a lot harder than the younger guys who have that sort of more natural athleticism. So I think we have to sort of give the older guys a little bit more respect in terms of, yes, their bodies are physiologically changing, but their fitness levels, there's no excuse for not doing the work.
How have you found it, Kumar?
I think the same. The older you get, the harder you have to work to keep fit. But it takes time. He's 38 and still going strong because he does work extra hours than the younger players coming in. But I think the key to lasting is to find the motivation to keep working hard on your fitness and your skills. Because, you know, in Sri Lanka, we always say a lot of players retire not because they don't enjoy the cricket, because they don't enjoy the warm-ups. I think if you know, they can find it in themselves to put that effort in because they're enjoying what they're doing, I think that's the key. But, they have, the older you get, I think you've got to just work hard on your fitness. And if you do, you are going to stay fitter and stronger. And the more work you do, you might, you know, end up being fitter than most guys coming into the team.
Gentlemen, it's a very interesting subject, and I'd like to thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that ends our roundtable on fitness.
The Roundtable on Crick Info Talk.